You're listening to Mike Dunlap on Talking to the Mic, sponsored by Perfect Edge and also D&L Enterprises. Give a listen to the show. Give us some feedback. Tell us who you want to hear.
Welcome to Talking to the Mic. This is episode 66, believe it or not. And got a really super guy, super respected guest today on the show. If you were around West Virginia football, especially in the early 80s, and had this guy as a strength coach, you're blessed. I want to welcome Alan Johnson to the show.
Hi, Mike.
How are we doing? Hey, Al, how are you? How you, guy?
I'm doing good. Things are going well here in East Tennessee.
The weather's finally broke up here in West Virginia. It didn't rain today, but thank goodness. Well, let's get right into it, Al. First of all, tell me about your career from day one. I want to hear everything.
Mike, you don't have enough. You don't have enough time for that, Mike.
Highlights. The highlights.
You tell my coaching career.
Yeah, coaching. You know, a lot of people don't know you were in baseball. A lot of people don't know you won a national championship. I mean, there's lots to talk about.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, Mikey. Kind of. It started. I was graduated from college. Graduated from Glenville State College in the center of West Virginia. There, Teachers College. Got out of there and went to work in southeastern Ohio at a real small farming community called Federal Hocking. And I taught at an elementary school for 3 years, Coolville Elementary. Probably one of the best jobs I've ever had because I felt like probably the most impact K through six kids, physical education. And so I was there for 3 years. I was assistant football coach, basketball, track coach. After my third year, you know, I thought I want to get my master's degree. So I applied for 60 graduate assistant positions for football, become a graduate football assistant, graduate assistant, and was rejected or no response from 59 of the 60, Mike.
Wow.
So the one response I got was from Georgetown College in Kentucky. I went there, interviewed for the GA position, was offered the position, went home, went back to Morgantown, lived in a double wide trailer, had just got married, and felt it wasn't the right fit. The only graduate assistant position I applied for in strength conditioning was at West Virginia University, and I was fortunate enough to be accepted. And so this is about May before I was going to report to camp with the WVU football team in August of 1982. And so about a month before I was supposed to report, I just got married, resigned my job. I called strength conditioning coach Dave Van Hollinger, who was a legend at West Virginia's an offensive lineman, All-American, and was the first strength conditioning coach in the history of WVU sports. Called him. I said, hey, Coach Van, I'll see you in a month. Just touching base with you. He said, well, I got bad news for you. That GA position is not going to be available till May of the following spring because the GA.
No.
Oh, yes. And I don't have a job now. I just get married. My wife's a nurse. And so anyway, she said, well, I'm still coming. Can I come there and volunteer? So I go there, Mike, and I volunteer for a year. And I'm helping Coach Van with 21 teams. We had three weight rooms, 21 teams, and it was just me and him. And so me and him, and of course the GA who still had to finish. And so we covered the entire athletic program that first year. So it was May of 83. Coach Van comes to me, says, Al, I'm out of here. I said, well, what are you talking about? He goes, well, Coach Bowden's offered me a position at Florida State. He recruited me to come to West Virginia from Turtle Creek, Pennsylvania, out of high school. And I believe my wife and I are going to go to Florida State. I'm going to fly down there this weekend. So anyway, he flies down there, gets the job, comes back, says, I've got it set up that, you know, you're 26 years old. He says, Mr. Schaus, he said, you know, Don Nealon, Gail Catlett. I've got their support, and I've got the support of Coach Linda Burdett, the gymnastics coach, and Coach Craig Turnbull, the wrestling coach, and the other sport coaches to hire you on an interim basis. And so this is May. This is May, June. So anyway, I go in to meet with Mr. Schaus. He says, I'm going to offer you this job. He throws a clipboard down on his desk, Mike, and there's a list of names there. And he says, you're not going to get the job if you think this is going to help you. And I'm sorry, Mr. Schaus, what are you talking about? And he says, well, he goes, this is a petition with 185 athletes from around campus that are endorsing you for this job. And it was headed by, I believe at the time, Jeff Hosteller. And he'd kind of instigated it, organized it. And so I said, Mr. Schaus, I don't know anything about this. I'm going to be honest with you. He says, are you sure? I said, yes, sir. So anyway, long story short, he says, hey, I'll hire you till in December. We'll come back together. I'll meet with all the sport coaches. We'll see how it goes. See if you are the right person for this job. And so anyway, Mike, so he comes back to me. So I worked that fall with the teams. He comes back to me in October. He says, I'm going to offer you the job. He says, I'm going to pay you $18,500. And this is October now. This is late October. He says, I'd like to offer you the job. Would you accept the job? And I said, no. He says, what? He says, we hired you on an interim basis. He goes, I want to extend the job offer to you. He says, will you accept the job? I said, no, sir. I want to wait till December to the terms of our original handshake and see if we both feel the same and weigh it out that and wait and see where it weighs out at that point. So anyway, we come back together in December. He says, first of all, this is one of the strangest responses to anyone I've ever offered a job to. He says, so we'll see what we both think and see how things go going into December. So anyway, go in and meet with him in December. He said, I'm going to offer the job for the last time. I'm not going to give you another extension on this. Would you accept the position? I said, yes, sir. He says, well, I want to tell you what, you've done a heck of a job. He says, instead of $18,500, I'm going to give you $21,000. I thought I'd hit the lotto.
Just not to interrupt you, Al, but just for those who don't know, is legendary athletic director, coach, NBA, Fred Schaus.
Coach Jerry West with the Lakers. You know, but anyway, so Mike, I ended up staying there for 8 years at West Virginia and was happy. And I'm from Parkersburg. And so out of the clear blue, I get a call from the general manager of the Baltimore Orioles. And at that time, there's only two strength conditioning coaches in all of baseball, one with the Pirates, one with the Chicago White Sox. And so a guy calls me, a guy by the name of Roland Heeman. And this is about 3 weeks before the last game of the season against, you know who it is, Pitt. And he says, you know, we'd like to fly you up here. I said, I can't. You know, the season's not over until, you know, the Pitt game on Saturday, which was 3 weeks away. I said, I can't come up to interview. And so after the game was at Pitt, as soon as the game was over, I changed clothes, got an overnight bag, hop a plane, catch it to Baltimore. So I go to Baltimore, go up there the next day. It's on a Sunday, interview with the Orioles, get offered the job of the Baltimore Orioles. So I would become the third strength conditioning coach all Major League Baseball. Hardest to say, I did not make the decision when I was there, Mike. But I did, came back home, sit down with my wife. It took me 5 days to decide to leave West Virginia, one of the toughest things I ever did. Ended up going there for 5 years. At the end of 4 years, Mike, I was ready to get out of baseball. I had a major league team plus six minor league teams by myself all over the country.
And you were telling me, Al, that you Cal Ripken was in Baltimore at the time.
Cal Ripken, Curt Schilling, Mike Mussina. And those were probably our big three. Rick Sutcliffe joined us his last year there, or my last year there in 92. I was there from 88 to 92. And great experience. You know, Cal Ripken was a tight end linebacker playing shortstop. 6'4", 230. He was 230 pounds.
Shortstop. He was a big man, carried it well.
Big man. And you know, it's crazy. I mean, he said it. Set the all-time, broke Lou Gehrig's record 1996. Played 2,632 consecutive games, Mike, and never once spoke about the streak. The 5 years I was with him, never talked about it, never spoke about it, never spoke of it. He seemed to come into the clubhouse, you know, have a temperature of 101, he's playing. Come in, back out of place, leaning to the side, he's playing. Come in the clubhouse, 3-4 hours for the game, ankle swollen, he's playing. And he would play. I mean, his threshold of pain was one of the most incredible things I've ever seen in my whole entire coaching career. And so, anyway, long story short, I ended up staying there 5 years. My end of my fourth year, you know, I mean, this is a crazy, crazy existence of six minor league teams plus a major league team. You know, every 16 to 18 days, I'm getting a plane ticket to fly to a minor league city. And I'm spending 48 to 72 hours with that minor league team flying back to meet the big league team. And so, at the end of my fourth year, you know, I stayed in touch with Coach Nealon and Mr. Schaus and found that my old job was going to open up. And so I came back to West Virginia, in the fall, it was November of 92. The last game, I believe it was the Syracuse game when they had the brawl on the field and the West Virginia Syracuse players got kicked out of the game in Morgantown. I was at that game in the press box, wasn't in an official capacity yet. But so anyway, I stayed there from 93 to 2001. Coach Nealon retires. Coach Rodriguez comes in. Have the chance to stay with Coach Rodriguez. I'm there with him for 6 months. During that 6 months, I get approached by Jim Trussell at Ohio State. I go to Ohio State for 5 years, and I had a chance to be part of a national championship team in 2002. From there, after 5 years of high state, kind of got burnt out, got out of coaching for 4 years, was in the private sector in Charleston, South Carolina as a part owner of a Velocity Sports Performance Center. I had a chance to come back home to Parkersburg to be an athletic director. And then the opportunity presented itself to go to Northwestern University, get back in college coaching, go there for 3 years as the assistant director of sports performance. And then out of clear blue, I get a call from strength and conditioning coach at East Tennessee State University in the mountains of East Tennessee in the Bristol Johnson City area, rocks throw from North Carolina. They're going to start football back. They dropped football in 2002. This was 2014, bringing football back, and asked me if I'd be interested. And I said, absolutely. And so I stayed as a strength and conditioning coach for football here under two head coaches for 7 years. And in the end of 7 years, the opportunity presented itself, the Collegiate Strength Conditioning Coaches Association, with which I was a member for 22 years, approached me about being part of a new executive team to run the Collegiate Strength Conditioning Coaches Association. So myself and two other collegiate strength conditioning coaches were recruited to help run this organization and have been in place for the last 16, 18 months. So it's been a whirlwind experience, but – you know, I still get a chance to get out and see East Tennessee State. My old assistant at West Virginia from Ona, West Virginia, Dave Lawson, recommended him for the position here at East Tennessee State. And he's been on board here and does an outstanding job here at East Tennessee State with football. And they won the Southern Conference Championship here just last year in 2021.
Al, for the folks listening, let me tell you, those are just the highlights. An incredibly resume. We recently had an event in Charleston to honor Daryl Talley. Al was there along with some former players. You know, you have much respect, Al, and well deserved.
Well, Mike, you know what? We're only as good as the people that we're surrounded by. We're only as good as the people that we have support by, and it's you know, I happen to be a product of the environment I grew up in, and the product and a product of the people and the support at all the different stops that I had during my coaching career, the athletes and the coaches and administration.
I got some questions though.
Shoot.
So, I mean, I got a bunch of them. Because you know, on this show, we just go with the flow and. Not conversation. And, I know now for a long time. Al, from 1985 till now, what would you say is the biggest difference in strength and conditioning at the college level?
Great question, Mike. I think right now there's more science involved, in the strength and conditioning than there's ever been and going forward. I think also that athletes now are bigger, faster, stronger. They're genetically more gifted, I think they, athletes today work hard, want to work hard. I think that, it's tough in some respects that, some athletes in terms of the, how they were raised, what star they are, 3-star, you're 4-star, you're 5-star, 18 to 22 year olds controlled my life in terms of my adult career for 35 plus years. And what I'm saying by that is all kids want discipline. All kids want to work hard. They may not tell you that till after the fact. But I just think today's kids are just, they're smarter. They're more gifted. The thing that you just got to keep pushing envelope on is continue to hold them accountable. I think, sometimes people say, well, kids aren't as tough as they used to be. I don't know if I agree with that. I think kids are just as tough, but I think they're products of their environment. I think that, through high school, you may have had a coach that just kind of lets you skate through practice or skate through preparation or let you get out of workouts. And in college, same way. I mean, you cannot show favorites. And can't show favoritism because, kids see right through that. And I think accountability, discipline are two of the biggest things that continue for me to be prevalent. The thing is, I think kids, the one thing I would tell you though, that's different is kids are more sensitive, to constructive criticism now as opposed to 10, 15, 25 years ago, But like I say, I mean, they're more gifted now than they've ever been.
Okay, I'm a freshman in high school, and I need to get stronger, get faster, put on some weight or take some weight off. I come to you, and you tell me to.
I ask you one question, Mike.
Okay.
Are you committed? And you're going to look at it like, yeah, I'm committed. Okay, well, my definition of commitment compared to yours may be entirely two different solar systems.
And what understood.
What I mean by committed is, okay, if I'm a, here's the demons as an athlete and sometimes as coaches in high school ranks that you fight, I'm sure, is that you got the baseball coach tells you not to work out. Don't touch a weight. It'll mess up your throwing mechanics. Or the basketball coach tells you not to lift weights, it'll affect your jump shot. We all know that the success of an athlete is based on the foundation of their ability to be stronger, faster, jump higher, run faster, those types of things. But the thing I would tell you is this, is be consistent in your work habits. I mean, if you really are committed and you want to be the best that you can possibly be, consistency. I mean, can you go 45 to 50 weeks out of 52 weeks a year and commit to your trade and your skill and your game? And this encompasses, lifting weights, you're talking about conditioning, you're talking about diet, you're talking about flexibility. A father the other day, a friend of mine just asked me, he says, my son is really working hard. He's got a chance. He's a freshman. To possibly play college football at some level, D2, D3, D1, doesn't know yet. I asked one question, how well does he bend? How well does he bend? He's an offensive lineman. How well does he bend? He says, well, he's a little bit stiff. He's a little bit tight. I said, well, the thing I'd be working on, everyone works on their strengths. If I get a strong bench press, most kids will spend most of their time working on their bench press. Whereas if I don't have, good strong legs or foundation or core or balance or leverage or, a high percentage of body fat, or I don't bend well, I need to work on my flexibility. So I tell kids, and I told this father the other day, I said, I'd have my son 3 days a week working on extra flexibility, and that would encompass some yoga. You know, I think, you know, sometimes the male perspective is yoga is for, is not for men or males, it's more for females. But I mean, if an athlete can improve his flexibility, can improve his speed, he can improve his movement and also prevent injuries. But I would say,
and it's
the biggest thing is, what's that?
I said the flexibility is something you can work on anytime, anywhere, right?
No question.
I mean,
you don't need equipment. You don't need equipment.
I was always proud of my flexibility. I could put my nose on my kneecap, and but going back to attending camps at WVU, I can remember you giving that talk and how important flexibility was, and I worked on that. So I was relatively injury free for my 3-year career that most people have said I've made more out of a 3-year high school football career than anybody in the country. And so I'll take that. What about coaches? Do you find, and we've worked on some projects together, and I'm not looking for you to pinpoint names, but do you find coaches are easier or harder to deal with today when you talk about implementing programs or something?
You're talking about football coaches, head coaches, or
yeah, coaches? Football coaches.
You know, if football coaches are not supportive of the weight room, they've already lost the game. I mean, if they can't sell the weight room to their kids and preparation, you know, what's the saying? I'd rather sweat in preparation than bleed in the battle. I'd rather sweat in preparation than bleed in the battle. And I think that coaches, you know, now, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's a mixed bag. I mean, you hear coaches say, hey, we've got 65 kids on the roster and only 35 of them showed up for summer workouts consistently, you know, and then you talk to other schools, they've got 30 kids and 29 of the 30 are showing up on a daily basis. So I guess it's the culture that you create as a coach, you know, is it one of success? Is it one of positivity? I mean, I think today's athletes respond much more to positivity than criticism. And I'm not saying you can't be critical. I'm not saying that you can't coach them up, you know, but, you know, kids now, I don't think respond as well to hard coaching. You know, and what's the adage? I can get more with honey than I can with manure.
Yeah.
You know, but I just think if I'm a coach in any sport, I don't care what sport you're in, and if you do not sell the aspect of preparation, you know, conditioning and flexibility and strength training, and if you don't sell that, I mean, you're really selling yourself and your program short. So I think it's a thing where you as a coach, it may not be your strength. And you're saying, well, yeah, I don't know much about that stuff. Find someone who does that can sell and can be, you know, an extension of you in that weight room or in those stretch lines.
Do you find, Al, let's change tack a little bit. Let's talk about the NIL money. You're a longtime college coach. Go back to the time when you couldn't even buy a player a Coke or give him a ride. Mm-hmm. Right now these guys are making thousands and thousands of dollars. What's your take on that?
Tell you what, I don't begrudge. You know, just like when the Yankees, George Steinbrenner, you know, their payroll was light years ahead of the rest of the Major League Baseball. And people condemned, like, the players, like, you know, you're making this, you're making that, whatever. I mean, it's like, I'm an electrician. I'm making $16 an hour. A guy down the street's going to give me 25. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, in all likelihood, you're going to take it. And I don't begrudge athletes today of getting funding. You know, the only thing I worry about chemistry. I worry about the locker room. You know, you got two guys sitting beside each other. One guy's making $150,000 a year, a freshman year. I'm a junior. I'm making 25.
Right.
And I think it can create a rift. You're going to see some things this fall. You're going to see some teams with a lot of talent. And you know, and maybe they're not playing up to par. You're thinking, boy, this team is loaded. Why aren't they performing up to speed of where they should be. Because, I mean, they got all these kids back. And if you could really delve deep, which you can't, I'm sure you're not going to know exact numbers, but, you know, the numbers of what they're receiving, the benefits they're receiving are so out of kilter. I mean, they're not the NIL right now is not being policed. It's not being policed. But I mean, the NCAA has stuck their head in the sand, you know, but I think I think Congress is trying to get involved. I think Senator Joe Manchin in West Virginia and another senator or two are trying to do something to regulate that. But I don't know. I can't say that I'm against NIL. I think it's good in theory, but you know, there's an athlete that's going to a school in Florida. He's a freshman, hasn't played a down. He's getting over $1 million, hasn't taken a snap in a college football game.
That's crazy.
I don't know how that works. I mean, I'm sure if he doesn't play, I mean, do they take the NIL away from him? Do they prorate it? I mean, do they take money away from him? I don't know how that works, but I just worry about the locker room. I worry about the chemistry, and I worry about does it help? Does it affect? You know, if things go south and you lose a couple games, now in that locker room and the sidelines, is there a lot of finger pointing? Like, well, you're the $100,000 man. You can't catch a ball, dude. You know, or you get alligator arms when you're going across the middle on a slant.
And you know it's bound to happen.
You know it's going to happen.
For better, for worse. And, you know, Coach Nealon, I talked to Coach Nealon about this, and his idea was that you put it in a fund, whatever that amount be, divvy it up equally among the players, and it's just your graduation. So I'm like you. I don't begrudge them making money, but I just, you know, I come from an era where it was just past the big cheating phase in college football, I guess, and it just seems like it's opening the door to let the fox in the hen house.
Well, and hey, Mike, well, you bring a great point because it's not, you know, they say it's not controlled by the football coaches at, you know, University A and Z University. I mean, but the thing is, I mean, recruits come on visits now, you know, they come on visits now and they sit down in the head coach's office and they're asking them, coach, what are you going to be able to give me as, you know, part of the NIL? You know, if that number is not as high as another school recruiting them, then that athlete and his parents got to make a decision like, okay, they're going to give me X, Y, and Z over here. They're only going to give me D, E, and F over here. I've got to make a decision. And it's, I don't know. I mean, it's insane. I mean, it's just, you know, the other thing, Mike's the transfer portal. I want to ask coaches out there, how do you recruit? I mean, I bring three quarterbacks in. At the end of the semester, two of them are gone. Now I go into spring ball. I've got one quarterback, and I've got an equipment manager, a student equipment manager who played quarterback, who's 5'4", who played in high school. We got to get through spring football with 1.5 quarterbacks.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I can't imagine being a head coach and trying to build a program. And that transfer portal, I don't agree with. I get it. But, you know, we already had rules in place for transfers. And, again, how do you build a program? How do you say a guy's going to be there for 4 years or 5 years? And, you know, Coach Nealon was famous for redshirting his freshman, give him another year to get stronger. And Al, your thoughts on this? In college football, even though it always was year round, it is now more like an NFL free agency job.
Oh, there's no question. It's free agency, and this is like the wild, wild west. And it's you know, it's here today, possibly going tomorrow. You know, and who's in your individual meeting room today may not be the same that's there next week. And and what they're doing too, Mike, is coaches are recruiting kids from other programs. I may have recruited you, and you went to another school instead of going to our university. Well, I stay in touch with you. Hey, if things go south and you don't like it, and you don't think you know you're getting the right deal there, holler at me. We'll get you back here.
Yeah, hadn't recruiting become like a year round thing? Also,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
you see all the time sleep. You see about them. About them signing players, you know, in December and March. I mean, in June. I just can't keep up with it.
Well, and the thing is, Mike, too, if you don't embrace the transfer portal, then you're going to be behind. I mean, you may not agree with it, and you may not like it. I mean, you've got a kid that started for you at tailback for two straight years and he decides to go somewhere else because, of course, maybe the NIL has been dangled out there to get more money or benefits, whatever it may be. But it's just, you know, no rhyme or reason. And the kid comes to say, coach says, coach, I'm leaving. It has nothing to do with you or the program. It's nothing personal, but I'm leaving. And then, you know, here you are. You're starting all over with a freshman, a redshirt freshman, a sophomore, a tailback who are unproven. And you've carried the brunt of the carries the last 2 years. I don't know how you recruit. I mean, you have to over-recruit, first of all, but who's to say that all those guys you recruit are going to be with you?
Right. Yeah. How do you keep them there? And let's be honest about this. West Virginia, the lines, academics, top of the line facilities. But when it comes to the big picture, you know, Oliver Luck has done a great job with the Country Roads deal for NIL money. They're to Alabama, a school like Michigan, Ohio State, with just deep.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's where you know, the disparity lies, I guess.
Yeah, and you can't, in some respects, you can and you can't recruit. I mean, it used to be an arms race in terms of your facilities. You know, we're going to build the biggest, the baddest facility. Now, I'm not sure athletes care as much about the facility as they do about the TV package that the conference is part of, the NIL deal that they're going to get. I mean, sure, they want nice facilities. But that's not the thing like 10 years ago that drove kids like, you know, Michigan's got this or Ohio State's got this or Alabama. Not as important.
Yeah, and to touch on that, Al, when West Virginia opened camp, they all got Nike shoes. I don't know what all they did get. And, of course, when I played in the 80s, that was all forbidden. Any of that stuff. And so – I mean, this, the landscape has changed so much. And speaking of stadium upgrades, let me throw this on you. I was talking to Coach Neal the other day, talked to him often. We were talking about facilities and stuff. I said, Coach, how much did it cost to build Mountaineer Field, new Mountaineer Field? That's what it'll always be to me. No disrespect to Mr. Puskar, but that's what it'll always be. And I think he said it was $21 million. Now, that was 1980. This past year, they had a $55 million upgrade. And last year, it was $44 million. So $100 million in 2 years in upgrading, five times what the original stadium cost.
Unbelievable. Well, hey, Mike, in 2001, I go to Ohio State. They're filling in the horseshoe at Ohio State. They're $9 million over budget, $9 million, because it costs the concrete. That summer, 2000, 2001, going into 2001 season, the price of concrete went up 600%. I remember being with Coach Jim Trussell and the AD at the time, Andy Geiger, when I went for an interview. And Coach Trussell asked Andy Geiger, he said, hey, how's the project coming along? You think we're going to be good to go in terms of completion? He says, yes. He goes, yeah, we're good. He goes, you know, it's a little over what we budgeted, but we're going to be fine. Coach Trussell says, well, how much was that, Andy? Andy goes, $9 million. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And Andy Geiger doesn't even flinch, Mike. He says, you know, Jim, you're gonna fill that stadium. And he goes, you know, we'll make $9 million off parking alone.
Wow.
For Ohio State football. So I mean he didn't even flinch. I mean, so you know, you're talking, well, that's 21 years ago. I mean, that's, everything's relative. I mean, now you know, that $9 million now is, you know, $44 million or whatever.
So you've been at some prestigious places. Let's talk about the difference, if you can. I'm not looking for you to call out any names or anything. The difference in philosophy, the difference in the gist of the programs between at West Virginia and Ohio State.
High State, when I left West Virginia, people asked me that question. What is the difference, Coach? What is the difference going from a high state? From West Virginia, Ohio State. I said, well, I was at West Virginia 13 years combined. I was there for two stints. I had three kids that could vertical jump over 40 inches, in the 80s and through the 90s. I go to Ohio State the first day I'm at Ohio State testing vertical jump. I got five kids that jump over 40 inches my first day. Three of the five, Mike, are freshmen. And people say, okay, what else? What is the other difference? I said, well, Ohio State got there. Kids expect to play in the NFL. They come in there ready to play in the NFL. And when I was at West Virginia, I mean, we loved what we did in terms of we got a lot of kids, developmental kids. A lot of kids we needed to develop that needed, you know, a couple years in the weight room. I mean, you got kids coming in that, you know, within, you know, a year or less of playing right away. And then the other thing, the fishbowl, the scrutiny from the fans, from the media, was threefold compared to West Virginia at that time. That was the biggest difference. And then, you know, the coaching, I mean, with Coach Trestle, Coach Don Nealon, both very similar in terms of their preparation. Neither one of them ever raised their voice. Never heard either one of them ever cuss an athlete. Never heard either one of them yell an athlete, but had a calm demeanor. And both of them, kid gets hurt, starting right tackle gets hurt. Next day, you're in a staff meeting. No panic. Next man up. We'll see what kind of coaches we are. I know that you, as my staff, you've prepared that backup right tackle to take the guy that got hurt that's out for the season or out for a series of weeks. I know that you've done a tremendous job of prepping him. And that was the same with Coach Nealon or Coach Trestle. But both took care of their staffs. Both showed people respect in all aspects of just day-to-day, whether on the field or off the field. But two of the most positive coaches that I've had the opportunity to work for.
Al, tell the story about the time you threw the stopwatch over the fence while you were testing players at West Virginia. And the incredible 40 time.
Oh, the incredible 40 time was 19. I knew you were going to ask me this, Mike. 1984. We had an offensive tackle, 6'5", 318 pounds. We're in summer. It's early summer. We're timing some 40s. This particular tackle runs at 4.98 40 at 318 or 319 pounds, which for that time, that was a big human being. I mean, at college level, pro level, at any level. So I'm like, nah, screw this up. There's no way.
And so, I'm willing to bet that was our friend Brian Joswiak.
That was Brian Joswiak, All-American, consensus All-American. Could close grip bench with his hands 8 to 10 inches apart, 500-pound close grip bench press with a flat back on the bench, by the way, at 319 pounds. So he lines up for the second 40, Mike. This time he runs a 5 flat. I take my watch. I throw it up in the mountain. I said, there's no way. This stopwatch is broke. There's no way that this thing works. So my assistant at the time, Dave Loss, I said, Dave, you got to time his last one. I got him at a 4.98. I got him at 5 flat. Dave times in at 5.01. Most incredible thing. I knew then. I mean, I knew Brian, obviously a great player, worked hard, worked his butt off, great leader. But I was like, I've never seen. I mean, that's when it opened my eyes. And, you know, I'm a young strength coach. I'm like in my second or third year at WVU, and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, this is phenomenal. I mean, of what you know, the possibilities are and what I'm part of that, you know, obviously that I've embraced, but I'd never seen anything like that in my career up to that point.
Yeah, I took a few licks from that big man myself. And, you know, I tell a story about the pregame warm-up, first game of Mountaineer Field when I was a freshman, and I had to go against Joswiak in warm-ups. And I was standing straddling the goal line. Now, I weighed 305 pounds. He hit me so hard, Al, that I took one step and was at the back of the end zone.
Oh, wow.
I mean, just threw me. But Joe's and I are great friends, you know, of course, still today. And he's got the Joe's Nose program and helps the kids. And him and Wolfley are starting up a Legends pregame show that I'm sure Mountaineer fans will want to listen to. And just in case you don't remember, it's been a while, but Joe's was the number 7 pick in the NFL draft. Number mm-hmm. 7, first round. Mm-hmm. And just a great guy. And do anything in the world for you. He came down for the Saturday event a couple weeks ago with Tex Williams to honor Coach Nealon to the West Virginia All Sports Hall of Fame. And glad to see him. I think he had a good time. Really good. G. Black, Mark Plants, Lee Javens. Who am I leaving out? Ricky Sherrod. You know, Ricky was 43 years old. He looked like he could suit up today.
Oh, yeah. He looked better. He looked better than when he played. I said, "What is he doing?" You know, but yeah, it was a great event. Great event. It was both events. You know, the Friday night with Daryl, with the signing with Daryl and friends, and then Saturday, I mean, 1,500 people at luncheon for the West Virginia Sports Hall of Fame, in which Mike, you were inducted, which is a tremendous and a great honor. But you were part of that group that got inducted on that Saturday, and. Tell what, for those out there listening, I mean, you know, you never know, you know, if people don't know you. I mean, you know, just, I mean, you're very humble, you're very sincere, very respectful people, but just your past and athletics and your journey and the Gatorade Player of the Year in West Virginia when you're in high school with the Polka Dots.
The Polka Dots.
It's just is astounding. But it was a great weekend. Great weekend. I tell you what, I'm glad that you invited me. Glad to be part of it. And it was very memorable to see all the names and faces.
We're going to try to do it again next year, Al. We might move the date a little bit. And, you know, it was a learning curve for us, D&L Enterprises. And, you know, I couldn't have pulled it off without my partner in crime, Norma Little, and her daughter, Haley. Oh, I mean, they were just spectacular. The Polka cheerleaders were there to help us. Mm-hmm. And, but yeah, I think everybody had a good time and got some great pictures. I sent you some, and we're going to make some more available. It was a good time. And Coach Nealon, when he saw you guys Saturday, he got choked up. And that really surprised me. Not that he's not a man of emotion, but for him to come right out and say, you know, I got choked up. And he called me maybe 2 days after that, and we talked for almost an hour about that and you guys and what you were into. And he really embraces his former players, which says a lot about Coach Nealon.
Well, and you know, Mike, one thing, I tell you what, people out there listening to this, if you're still awake and you're listening to this, I want to tell you what, in all my coaching stops, Coach Nealon is one of the most phenomenal human beings I ever had the chance to be around or be part of or work for. And his humility is a different level. And from the first day I met Coach Nealon as a GA, as a volunteer GA, till the day he retired in 2001, never changed. And he was a guy, and he is a guy, that cares about people, cared about his players, cared about his staff. And he put others before himself. And I tell you what, it was great to see him. I mean, he's still sharp as a tack. And he, you could tell it was, he was also inducted that day with Greg White and Coach Pruitt into that West Virginia Sports Hall of Fame. But it was a great experience. But like I say, Coach Nealon is one of a kind.
Yeah, I actually talked to Coach Pruitt today, and we're going to have him on the show next week sometime. What a great guy, great story. We're trying to drum up interest in getting him into the College Football Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. Certainly deserving. They have some guidelines in Bob's case. He coached 10 years, and he only coached 9. So they're trying to waive that, and we're trying to help him. Another humble guy. So we're going to do anything we can. Also, I would be remiss if I didn't mention Daryl Talley. We're gearing up for his run at the NFL Hall of Fame. And I tell people like this, when they say, do you think Daryl Talley does this way? If you were playing kickball or wiffle ball or thing on the playground and there stood Daryl Talley, you take him. And, you know, all the former Bills he played with, great teams, they've all said he was the guy that basically stirred the drink. Bruce Smith gives him credit for the 200 sacks that he got, said he couldn't hit that number without, you know, opposing lines having to worry about Daryl. And so we're trying to make some things happen now.
We you know, Mike, it's funny you mentioned Daryl. I was a volunteer GA his senior year. And he was, I tell you what, just looking at him, his senior year, I don't think he weighed above 210, 215. But he's a mean son of a gun, mean-looking son of a gun. And, I mean, he played sideline to sidelines and play hurt and play with injuries and, you know, and no excuses. But if you have a chance to – if you've had the chance or you have the chance to meet him and just talk to him for like 15 minutes and listen to his background in terms of how he grew up in Cleveland, East Shaw High School, how he grew up, you will totally understand – the way he was raised and the environment he's raised in as to why he was so successful as a football player and why he had such toughness. And you know, and Mike, you know, this, all the great ones, they all have chips on their shoulders. And, and if you find out more about their story, you figure out why they got that, why they had that chip on their story and on their shoulder and why they were successful as what they were.
Yeah. 14 years in the NFL, I never missed a game, Al.
Yeah. And
to even, I tell him this, to even see him walking around, he's a great golfer, plays golf about every day. And it just is really a work of wonder that he can still get around as good as he does.
Yeah.
And, but a very humble guy. I'll tell you this real quick story. At the Hall of Fame luncheon, Daryl sat at my table and the, as they announced the different inductees, the ones that got standing ovations, Daryl Talley stood up for every name called and clapped. Now, he's a superstar. He didn't have to do that.
Yeah,
but he did. That's the kind of guy he is. And you talk about him being mean. I told him one time, I said, you know, Daryl, when I was a kid, most parents would tell you to look out for the boogeyman. My parents told me to look out for Daryl Talley. And he's just got this he's got this infectious laugh, but he's a great guy, and we're going to try to get him in the Hall of Fame. And he does, you know, I try to get him interviews and keep his name out there and keep it relevant. And we're going to see what we – he just got inducted into the Hula Bowl Hall of Fame.
I saw that. That's outstanding.
Yeah, it's outstanding. And just, you know, it's been a big year for him, had his number retired. So – you know, good things. And I talk to him just about every day. I'm the luckiest guy when it comes to Mountaineer football. I know a lot of the guys. I was great friends with Sam Huff. Talked to him every day. Great friends with Daryl Talley, two of the names that are enshrined on the stadium. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, Coach Nealon and this, just you and just about anybody. And I had a great interview with Dale Wolfley Monday. If you've not heard that, I highly recommend you listen to that. Of course, Wolf, you know, he could blow up an onion sack. And
no, there's no question.
But what a great guy.
Great guy.
And he's coming out, like I say, with a couple of shows, a West Virginia Legends pregame show. It's going to have guys, of course, I can't think of any right now, but Joe Zwack's going to be part of it. Daryl Talley.
Avon Coburn, probably.
Beasley.
Who,
Aaron Beasley's up for the College Football Hall of Fame on this year's ballot. So join so you can vote for him. And well, Al, I've enjoyed it. I got one more question for you.
Okay.
The score of the backyard brawl.
Mike, I hope it's close. And I hope we got the ball. I hope we shut him down. I hope it's fourth down. And they're on the other side of the 50, fourth down, and they need 1 inch, first down, keep the drive alive, and we shut them down. We keep the ball less than a minute and a half to go in the game. We run the clock out. I hope we beat it. I hope it's close, because that's even more devastating, because, you know, I like to beat them by, you know, maybe less than three. I know most Mountaineer fans don't want to hear that. They want to see a, you know, some room for to exhale, but I'd like to see us shut them down on a drive. They got a drive going in the last minute and a half, 2 minutes of the game. We shut them down. They got a punt. We get the ball. We just double tight end, I formation, jumbo formation with three backs in the backfield, and we just run the clock out. I'm gonna say 14-13. That's probably not realistic in today's world with the offenses. But I will say 24-21, West Virginia.
Sounds like a good score. My guest today has been Hall of Fame strength and conditioning coach Alan Johnson, longtime friend of mine. Appreciate you coming on, Al, and talking to the mic. And, you know, check out our sponsors, PerfectEdge.com. DNLEnterprises.com, and now we'll have you on again, buddy.
Well, Mike, thank you. I appreciate it. And hey, go Mountaineers.